Hello there, and welcome to the Sports Report. We are your host. I am Ben Meredith.
And I am also Ben Meredith.
Welcome to another episode where today we plan on getting into some NFL playoff madness, including some Christmas Day games, some NBA games happening, along with a little bit of something I find questionable, some college basketball, some Tar Heels, primarily focusing on ACC, as well as another one of Dad's favorites, the Net Update, a National Player of the Year conversation, and then we go down to college football talking about all of the bowl games and all of the college football, not all the bowl games, but some of the bowl games along with college football action in the playoffs and some portal action as well. So, but before we get into that, Dad, how was your Christmas and New Year?
Fantastic. Happy to be back.
Happy to be back in South Carolina. We did take a short trip, if you read my most recent blog post. But yeah, we're hoping to enjoy this new year. But yeah, we wish all of our listeners a happy new year as well. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. NFL, the Lions eliminated after the loss to the Vikings, meaning one more NFC spot remaining after the Packers clinch. But that spot can only go to the NFC South. The winner of Panthers and Bucks. We'll get that one. We'll get into more of that later. Christmas Day. Dad, did you watch any Christmas Day games other than a little bit of the Chiefs game?
I saw a tiny bit of the Chiefs game, but that was it.
Cowboys outlast Commanders. Kind of a weird game. We already talked about the Lions. And then losing. And then Chris Oladokun in the Chiefs game impressed me despite the loss, having a few plays that, in my opinion, looked Mahomey. And then it could have potentially been Travis Kelce's last game at Arrowhead Stadium. So we wish the man great endeavors in his broadcasting career, as we assume he will after the podcast. And then this has no impact on the play. It does have impact on the players, though. Kansas City Chiefs making decision to move from Missouri to Kansas. So the border jump, if you will, over that small misstep. But they will leave behind one of the more historic venues in the NFL, Arrowhead Stadium, which is a little sad, but at the same time, we expect bigger and better things from the Chiefs, for the Chiefs in the future. NFL mock drafts will be heating up on the Sports Report website, so be on the lookout for those in early February. I will be probably making one of those. But that could change due to college football playoffs, injuries, and decisions made by the players. So then, DK Metcalf getting suspended for punching a fan. Do you have anything you'd like to say about that one?
So, yeah, DK Metcalf punched a guy. Can't punch a guy, turns out, no matter how mad the guy makes you.
Yeah, and there were about three or four different angles of it. One, the DK Metcalf, first, he tried to appeal the suspension, which is dumb. You're not going to appeal a suspension and be successful when you punched a guy in the face. No matter what he calls you. Or your mother. He called his mom a no-no word and him the N-word, allegedly, and then we saw some other angles of it, and that looked like nowhere to be found. So, unfortunate for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They go into Week 18. They need to win against the Ravens to get a playoff spot in the AFC. They'll get the 4 seed if they win. They'll be eliminated if they lose. The Bucks-Panthers will battle for the 4 seed in the NFC. That will be a Saturday evening football game for the East Coast, an early afternoon game for my West Coast listeners. And then, but that result might not matter depending on the result of the Falcons game on Sunday. So if the Falcons win on Sunday, it'll be a three-way tie for 8-9. And because of the fact that the Panthers swept the Falcons and the Bucks got swept and the Bucks split with the Falcons, the Panthers would automatically win. So if the Bucks win and the Falcons win, it doesn't matter. The Panthers still get it, which is insane to me.
Right.
And then the Seahawks could get the one seed, or could still have the one seed if they win Saturday night against the 49ers. They will play. That was a really fun game on, I believe it was Sunday Night Football, between the 49ers and Bears. And then the Packers locking at the 7 seed. If we go look at the playoff picture itself, we have the Broncos, Patriots, Jaguars, and Texans right now as the first four teams in, the Chargers and Bills in as well. The Jaguars and Texans are not locked into their spot. If the Jags win, they're the three seed. If the Texans win and the Jags lose, I believe the Texans get the three seed. Jags would bump down to the four seed, or five seed. And then Patriots and Broncos, that result depends for the one seed. If Patriots win against Miami, which you assume they will, and the Broncos lose to Los Angeles Chargers, which is unlikely because the Chargers are resting their starting quarterback, then the Patriots would get the one seed and the Broncos would get the two seed. And we already mentioned the Steelers and Ravens needing to battle it out for the four seed, and then the Chargers and Bills bringing up the rear. If the Chargers lose, which they probably will, they will get the seven seed, and the Bills will get the six seed. In the NFC, it's a very similar situation, just one battle for one more spot, but the one seed, the only difference is the one seed and five seed, which is a division game and a one seed clincher game, could decide the one seed. So that'll be huge. Definitely we'll be tuning into that one. The Bears at two, they're kind of locked. No, they could, if they lose and the Eagles win, they will get bumped down to three. 49ers, Rams. Rams are locked in at the six seed. So basically 6-7 are locked in. Yes, pun slightly intended.
6-7.
Bears, but because the Packers are locked in at that seven seed because they only have 9 wins. But yeah, so now going back, I think that's all we have for the NFL.
I'm just excited that we watched a Bills game while on vacation and no one died. Because the last time, it might be the last time I watched a Bills game, period, but it was definitely the last time that I watched a Bills game on vacation. And yeah, years ago, we were there when DeMar Hamlin died for a few minutes, which
I think it was a few hours.
Was wild to watch him die right there on TV and then listen to the announcers do that. So shout out Bills for playing an entire game without murdering someone. But that was fun to reminisce because last time we watched that, it was fun to reminisce because he didn't actually die. It was kind of some deja vu when we turn on the TV on family vacation and there's a Bills game and I thought, oh no, we should be careful. I don't know how
in a week 17 game the same exact scenario.
I don't know how the mojo works, but I don't want to mess up the mojo here. And I don't know if it was me that caused it at being a non-Bills fan tuning in to a Bills game. That's fun.
Yeah, but do you have anything else you'd like to add about the NFL?
I think I'm good. I
think you're good. All right. If we have nothing else to talk about in the NFL, we have college basketball. The Heels rolling into conference play with a big win over FSU. I watched this game passively. As we previously mentioned, we were in Tennessee, so we were kind of having a family fun night. What did you think about this game? You watched it in its entirety.
Yeah, it was impressive. I mean, Florida State's not a great team this year, either by record or by expectation. And so it wasn't... the biggest thing for me was how different this FSU team is from the previous iterations of FSU. Because you've got, if you had asked me before I watched the game, what do you expect out of FSU? I'm going to expect these huge, lengthy, lanky, athletic dudes doing big athletic dude things. And that is not FSU this year. So it was, expectation wise, I came into the game, I had listened to a little bit of pregame, so I knew that that wasn't what we were going to get, but it was really startling to see a team that really is working on hoisting a ton of threes, relying on their defense, which they were just overmatched. North Carolina's too athletic, too big. They decided to lock down one of the two post players.
In the first half.
He didn't have like 20 points in the second, but Vassar, they just basically had to decide who are we going to lock down, and they chose Vassar, which meant Caleb was like just going off in the first half. In the second half, it was really entertaining to watch him just decide, no, I'm going to do what they don't want me to do. And so, yeah, he really impressive performance by Caleb Wilson, but also really impressive in general, just to see the Tar Heels get out there and despite them doing pretty much what they wanted to do in the first half, or the first 5 minutes of the first half for sure, and then you know, eventually we took over the game and pulled away a little. But yeah, I was great win to start conference play, and I'm a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. My reactions were similar. I thought Wilson played great. I thought Trimble played great. Kyan Evans having kind of a breakout game for his first real Tar Heel game, where we looked at it and went, huh, this is why we got the kid out of the Midwest. He had, I think, 16, 15 points, something like that, and he airballed like four shots. If he had made all his shots, he could have had 30. Right. But yeah, so things to work on, but also very proud of the kid as well. And then in the words of Dick Vitale, we have a diaper dandy in the ACC with Caleb Wilson. That kid is phenomenal.
And I really would like for the national media to continue ignoring him. Like,
100%.
Let's keep him mad, because right now you keep saying the number five freshman in the nation, despite him doing things that literally no one has ever done. So yeah, let's keep calling him number five, because I, granted, have not watched BYU a whole lot this year. I have not watched Duke at all this year, other than a, you know, few snippets here and there that I've seen on social media. But I don't know how anyone can be doing what Caleb Wilson is doing, both that shows up in the stat sheet and the stuff that doesn't show up in the stat sheet. Like, yeah, he got credited for one offensive rebound, for running from essentially the other three-point line and grabbing it out of someone's hands who was two steps away from it. That only counts as one offensive rebound. And, you know, in a stat sheet, you're like, yeah, he got one offensive rebound. But those of us watching the game saw that was 100% an effort play on his part. He was like, that's my ball. I'm going to go get that ball and feed Henry down low and two easy points. That doesn't show up on the stat sheet other than rebound and assist. But good gracious. Yes, please keep calling him the number five player in the nation, number five freshman, number five player, whatever. Let's keep calling him that, and he'll just keep doing literally historic things because he's so mad at the national media. I would love that.
Yeah, if you're in the conversation as first to ever in North Carolina basketball, you are elite, because it's we've been elite for the last 50 years, excluding about a decade time, probably 4 years of time in the early 2000s. But to say the first to ever, you're talking about Tyler Hansbrough, Vince Carter, Michael Jordan level of good.
Yep, it is. It's remarkable to see him do what he's doing. And again, the stuff that you see in the stat sheet, sure, impressive, awesome, even. But it's the stuff that you don't see. It's the fact that he single-handedly changed a game to a whiteout game on social media. I think I'm looking forward to the end of the season. If he continues on the trajectory he's on, the man will be able to say, Tuesday night in the Dean Dome is pantsless night. and he'll get people showing up in their underwear. Like, he is just absolutely a fan favorite. He can do whatever he wants to do in terms of the team environment, because he's just so fun to watch. And even that monster dunk where it looked like FSU had shut us out offensively, and Evans was it? It was Evans,
Dixon.
It was Dixon. You're right. And Dixon finally breaks through into the middle of the defense. You know, they had kept us almost at the half court line for the whole possession. Dixon breaks through. Caleb gets this just absolute monster dunk that's been all over social media. And you watch him afterwards, and he lands, he looks for the camera, And he just grins. Like, he's just having a blast. It was like there. I love players that, you know, he could have gotten up in that guy's face because he just made him look silly on social media for the next 2 weeks. And yeah, he could have gotten up in his face and talked smack. But instead, he went for the camera. He was just grinning like, this is fun, y'all. I love the post-game interview on the Tar Heel Sports Network. They showed him the dunk. He hadn't seen it yet. And he was like, man, I didn't realize I pulled it back that far. Like, he's just in it for just having a blast, and he's trying to prove people wrong. He's got such a chip on his shoulder, which, again, please, he is still, you know, just the number five guy in the nation. He's garbage, really.
Yeah.
If you ask me, I think Caleb Wilson is, you know, that Boozer kid. Man, you got to watch out for him.
Yeah.
Debansia. Dibansasa. he's got him, man. Watch out. Watch out for BYU in the Final Four.
Okay. Yeah. Again, I absolutely love Caleb Wilson. I think he's. His motor, his skill, his athleticism. But yeah, last I saw, he was, I think, like the fourth or fifth guy in the draft.
Yes, which, clearly.
To me, I have a few things. We'll kind of get into this with the National Player of the Year debate. But it's like Darren Peterson, it's like Boozer, Darren Peterson, and DeBansa are kind of like your 1A, B, and C there. And then Caleb's your fourth. Which to me, I get the Darren Peterson hype pre-injury.
Right.
But since that, really the North Carolina game, he hasn't been fully healthy. He aggravated his hamstring. And so now you're looking at him. I think that takes a lot of value out of a guy. Maybe NFL, NBA is different in that regard. Because mm-hmm. in the NFL, it's like, oh, well, he had a torn meniscus his junior year and then rolled his ankle in the final seconds of their bowl loss. Mm-hmm. So that means Arch Manning's not as valuable. Whereas in the NBA, it's like, we have trainers for that. But yeah, I think that to me it's Caleb and Boozer up there, then DeBansa, then Peterson, in my opinion. But I also don't get paid to be NBA GM.
That's right.
So there's that. Some ACC kind of, I guess, headlines you could call it. Duke is still a heavy favorite in the ACC. They're probably not projected to lose a single game until February, or until late March, if even then. And then second place race will come down to UNC, Louisville, UVA, and Cal. I don't know if Cal won this past week. They played during New Year's Eve week. Let's see how they did. Ah, they played today at 11 p.m. against Notre Dame. Notre Dame is coming off of a win over Stanford, who I believe prior to that was, I think Stanford was pretty solid. They only lost by 7. Yeah, Stanford's 11-3, so you're looking at it now, it's like Stanford, Cal, and NC State are kind of in that second or third tier, really, mm-hmm. of if you consider Duke in a tier of their own. Second to third tier teams in there. Then you've got Miami, Virginia Tech, and Clemson kind of out there. And those, if all of those teams make it into the NCAA tournament, I will be shocked. I think a Virginia Tech or a Miami might get the shaft there. But yeah, I think that I saw a stat where it was like no teams in the ACC were below 500.
Yeah.
Coming into conference play, which is absurd. Take that to your face, Lenardi. But yeah, do you have anything else you have to say about the ACC?
Duke, no, it's a much better field this year. You can see that, all of the ACC teams, not all, but all that could, have taken a page out of the SEC and decided, hey, we're going to actually pay these players a lot. And so we're going to get more of the top-tier talent. But also, credit to the coaches in the ACC uh-huh. because they're getting, you know, Calipari for years at Kentucky proved that you could get lots of big-name players, but can you get them to play well together year in, year out? Now, obviously, this isn't the second year yet, but so far this year, it looks like these ACC coaches are doing a good job of getting their teams that are full of more talent to play better as teams. That's the thing about the North Carolina team that I've been most impressed by is, last year we didn't have the size and talent is what comes with size, you know. So the intangibles, the things that you can't coach, we didn't have. But we did have a team that played hard, played, you know, fairly well together. This year we got all of the size, positional talent, and we've got these players really buying into the coach's system. I haven't watched a ton of other games other than North Carolina, but, I mean, you got to credit John Shire. He's got these players playing well together. I'm just excited that the narrative is not, it's a down ACC year, because now we're going to be able to actually build our resume for the tournament or for top seeding in the tournament or whatever based on, well, they played the ACC, which was tough this year. So thank you to the ESPN and other sports giant media that is finally looking at the ACC and seeing something. Some of that scheduling, I'm sure. We've got teams that are scheduling more of these cupcake teams that they can blow out, which is what you need to do for the net. And then not scheduling as many of those potential spoiler teams that are going to come in and spoil your net ranking and spoil your non-conference. So the ACC, I don't love everything that they do, but at least at some level, they're doing a better job this year of playing in the big leagues and doing things the way these teams that have been getting all this love for so many years have been doing. So that's exciting for me.
So the ACC has 7 teams in the top 40 of the net and 3 teams in the top 20, unless Virginia is, no, Virginia is not in the top 20. So that's a very solid and up year for the ACC, and I'm proud to say that as a fan, which kind of glides us right back into the net conversation.
Have any of my net rants made it to the public yet?
Yes. I think 2 of them have.
Okay, good. I was just going to make sure.
Yes.
Because that's good content.
We've had some technical difficulties, but yes, I believe your first net rant made it.
Spoiler for those net rants that met the cutting room floor is just watch the games. just watch the game with somebody who knows basketball. Watch the games. It does not matter what numbers say. Watch the games.
And we made a joke on a cutting room floor cut that said that if a team had a cold like I do today, that they would drop in their net rankings.
That's right.
Which is clearly why the Tar Heels have fell from 15 to 18. Because Caleb Wilson caught the flu or something. Or no, we'll say Elijah Davis caught the flu. But yeah, our number one... 1, 2, and 3 kind of staying the same. Michigan, Arizona, and Iowa State. They are all undefeated with 4 quad one wins. Then Gonzaga is 4-14-1 with 3 quad one wins and a quad one loss. That quad one loss coming to Michigan. Then Duke, their one loss coming to Texas Tech, who is somewhere in the top 15. They have 4 quad one wins, though. So I think the main thing that keeps Gonzaga up is the fact they have 4 quad two wins, which will change because there are 0 teams in the first 3 quads in the West Coast Conference. So I think Gonzaga might fall if they just resume based. But again, the media loves Gonzaga.
Not if they blow them out.
That's true.
Says it's fine if you play quad four teams. You just have to beat the doors off of them. And so Gonzaga can stay up just by blowing teams out. And that's why the ACC last year, for example, was, you know, quote-unquote down, or the year before that, quote-unquote down. But the level of athlete in the ACC beats the level of athlete at the bottom tier of some of these other conferences that were quote-unquote down. And so, it's just completely nonsensical to say that North Carolina should blow out Wake Forest or a Virginia Tech or whoever just because they are
70
ranked in the net at a certain point, which some of that ranked in the net is a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're ranked in the 70s so that you stay ranked in the 70s. And in order to get out of the 70s, you've got to blow out teams. And so you, wherever you start in the net is a curse. And it's just obnoxiously stupid to think that a player who was recruited to the ACC is on the same level of a player who was recruited to the bottom side of the Mountain West. It's just absurd. Zero of those teams are going to be coming to the Dean Dome and even looking good.
Yeah, there's no way Utah State, who is number 19, is going to beat the NC State B team.
There's no shot. It's just an absurd way to rank how good teams are when you start at a certain point that is determined by magic and sorcery. This team of NC State, I'll take them as an example.
Yeah.
This team of NC State players who we've literally never seen. They have a brand new coach. They have a brand new everything. They are ranked at whatever at the beginning of the season.
50th or whatever. They're 32nd.
Based on what? And so that's either immediately becomes like they immediately after three games go, oh gosh, NC State's way better than they were supposed to be. And they jump up. But even that jump up part it's unfair. They started at the wrong spot. Why don't we start the rankings after the third game? Why don't we do that? What is keeping us from saying nobody gets a ranking until we see you play three games?
Yeah.
And then at week three, we will give you rankings. Because
that's how the AP should do it. I think that is how the net does it. I don't think that's how the AP does it, which is stupid. The AP doesn't matter.
It should absolutely not matter what your rank. I would say mid-season even. Let's wait till we get into conference play and then give them rankings. Because then you can see, okay, you've got a body of work to say, we've seen this group of 5 or 8 or 10 play against what we assumed was relatively even competition based on X, Y, and Z, and then we can give them the rankings. But before that, it's just remarkably dumb to assume that the ACC is up or down based on our preseason assumptions. You know, in years gone by, sure, we knew what we were going to get from a North Carolina team because Armando Bacot's coming back or whatever, or even before that, a Hansbro team. It's like, you could rank the 2009 Tar Heels because you'd seen all of them play, and they all came back. But even that year, you hadn't seen all of some other team because they were brand new.
You hadn't seen Illinois yet.
So rankings are dumb, and I hate them as a general rule. But I do like it when you know, the Illinois example is a great one. In 2005, I loved that Illinois.
Wrong team, I thought.
Yeah, I loved that Illinois was given the one seed or the one ranking all season long because it gave us a reason to be like, nope. And when we finally got to see them, we showed them who's number one. I love rankings as a tool for motivation, which is why I never like it when the Tar Heels are ranked number one, because they don't give out trophies for
being number one in November.
Being number one going into conference play, you got to get out there and you got to play it, and you got to have a good coach, and you got to have a good team that listens to that coach.
Absolutely. We'll finish off the top 10 before I have one other thing I like to say about this idiocy. Purdue at 6, they're 12-1, only loss coming to Iowa State, who's number 3. Vanderbilt at 7, UConn at 8, BYU at 9, Illinois at 10. That makes no sense. Illinois at 10, they're 3-3 in quad 1. My one travesty here is, one, a Mountain West team being in the top 20. That's never going to change, even though it's so stupid. Because they don't even have a quad one. Yeah. Okay. But Texas Tech, who beat Duke, they're 10-3. They're 2-3 in the net, which is the same record as the number 16 team, a better record than the number 19 team. Same amount of wins as the number 15 team and the number 13 team. A better record than the number 12 team. Like, whatever. And they beat Duke. I don't know if I mentioned that. I'm going to keep saying that. They beat Duke. The number 20, which is two spots behind the Tar Heels, who are number 18. They are 3-1 in the net. That lack of quad two wins is what's holding back, or quad two games, period, is what's holding back the Tar Heels. I think we will get some more of those when we play an NC State, when we play a Wake Forest, when we play a Cal. Those teams will probably be in that quad two range by the end of the season. But yeah, I think that is what's really holding back the Tar Heels from getting this idiotic metric. You have anything else you'd like to say about the net?
No. I just think let's watch the games and watch the actual game action and not, you know, base our rankings on whether or not somebody's got a cold.
Then the NPOY discussion. I've seen lots of discussions. I saw a discussion where Caleb Wilson was second team All America. Behind Yaxel Lindenborg, whatever. No. First of all, Lindenborg, sure, he's on the best team in America. He's averaging 15.8 a game. I don't care how good your team is. If you're averaging 15.8 a game, that's a borderline third team. All-American, in my opinion. But my personal top five, Boozer, DeBanza, and Wilson, those are my top three. I think Wilson and DeBanza are right there at each other. Boozer's light years ahead of everybody in the media and in my opinion. Braden Smith at four, he's the point guard for Purdue. He's been there since the middle of the Biden administration. We'll just say his first Trump administration. He's been there forever. And then Lindenborg and Darren Peterson. Again, I think Peterson would be up there with Smith. I had them, Lindenborg and Peterson tied for fifth because if it wasn't for Peterson's injury, he'd be up there with ahead of Braden Smith, but I just couldn't do that to him due to the hamstring injuries. And then the FanDuel Sportsbook top five, Boozer, DeBanza, Lindenborg, Braden Smith, and Caleb Wilson is theirs, which is just idiotic in my opinion. But whatever. To be fair, Smith is averaging like 9 assists, may even be 10. I think he's averaging a double-double in assists, which is rare. But yeah, that's a crazy game. You have anything else to say about the,
yeah, I mean, five? To stay with my own metric, right? Watch the games to know who's good or not good. I haven't watched many non-UNC games this year, so I can't really give you a personal top five because I don't know, because I haven't watched the games, but I have watched North Carolina. And again, like I said at the top of the episode, it's tough for me to imagine a player who's doing more both stat stuffing and things that you can't record, like effort, and he doesn't take plays off. Even defensively, he doesn't take plays off. So anyways, I think that he is doing the type of things that if North Carolina as a team has success, especially when we go one-on-one against Duke or when we get into the tournament, of course, a lot of the National Player of the Year stuff has already been decided before you get into tournament time. So if we get through ACC season with him doing the same things to teams that he's been doing so far, I cannot imagine a world where he doesn't, his stock doesn't rise. But it comes down to playing the games. It comes down to him continuing to execute, controlling what he can control, and not being stuck on what Boozer's doing or DeBonce's doing or whatever. So it's a fun season to watch Tar Heel basketball.
Absolutely. We will get to college football, but first we want to talk about some games that happened around the new year. Duke beat Georgia Tech narrowly, I will say. Tech fell by 6. I think they were underdog by a lot more than that. Props to Duke, props to John Shire. I meant to say this earlier when you mentioned Shire and his coaching style. They do now have the number one draft class in the class of 2026, so props to them. But in the words of Dame Dalla, ain't got no rings since 2015. So we'll see if that can result. But yeah, so congrats to them. And then Xavier and UConn played UConn beat the doors off them. I think it was like 97-63. I can double check that score real quick. But let's see here. UConn beat them. Yeah, Wednesday, December 31st, they won 90-67. Absolutely crazy game for the Huskies as they hope to reclaim the basketball throne, which they had a few seasons ago. Do you have anything to say about those two games?
Nope.
All right, so we will finish up today with college football. Transfer portal action first. Tar Heels QB decides to stay. Gio Lopez, hopefully he can have a step-up sophomore season. And then Lenora Sellers, the South Carolina kid, decides to stay there in Columbia for another season. Michigan, amid scandal, finds their new head coach, I believe from Utah, Kyle Whittingham. So congrats to Michigan for finding their head coach and Whittingham for getting that job. The SEC has yet to win a bowl game outside of the college football playoff quarterfinals. So teams like Tennessee lost, Vanderbilt lost, other games like that. Florida, Florida wasn't eligible. There was a game called the Florida Bowl, which an SEC team lost. But yeah, I mean, just a little bit of a shocker, but I mean, it also tells the media something. But yeah, so that's a pretty crazy stat out there. The only two wins they have is Ole Miss over Georgia, which was going to be an SEC team regardless, then Oklahoma versus Alabama, which again was going to be an SEC team regardless. So it doesn't matter as much. Well, no, sorry. Indiana versus Alabama. So Alabama even lost that one. So, yeah, forgot. Indiana's not Oklahoma. Sorry about that. Wrong red team. And then we get into the college football playoff first round and quarterfinals. Miami wins against A&M, Texas A&M, in a close game. No touchdowns until less than 3 minutes left in the game. I was actually at a middle school basketball game when this game happened. And they scored, and the guy sitting beside me had the game in his lap. I had the UNC-Ohio State game in my lap, and like the pregame show for that. And the game's happening. We were winning. The Edgewood boys were smoking them. And we're watching the game, and they had scored. The guy to my right had the game. The guy to my far left, he was like probably 7 or 8 feet out of arm's distance to me, beside me. And he said, they should have burned the clock and kicked a field goal, but the wind was so bad that I said, yeah, but you can't rely on any kickers, even if it's 10 yards or 25 yards. It still could be a missable shot with the way the wind had been playing. And then Oklahoma, Alabama with a 17-point comeback, and then receiver Brooks for Alabama had a heck of a game. He had one catch where he caught it around a defender, hauled it in. I'm not sure how he did that, defying physics. And then the group of five gets murdered. Tulane losing to Ole Miss handily. Same with JMU and Oregon. Curious to see how this shakes up the committee in the future. Will they, in the future, if it comes down to a Notre Dame at 10-12 versus a James Madison at 10-2, James Madison undefeated, or a 11-1 win conference champion Boise State, who gets in that situation? I think it changes to Notre Dame next year, as unfortunate as that sounds. Miami upsets the reigning champs thanks to great defense, including a pick six, to win 24-14. The pass rush by Miami being elite in this game. Just phenomenal. The final interception thrown by Saiyan was a pressured pass that was near nobody, and I think it was Pat McAfee who said it. He said, Saiyan throws a punt to end the game, which is essentially what that was. It was a 25-yard punt to the Miami Hurricanes. Obviously, Michael Irvin had some fun that night, as well as Dwayne The Rock Johnson and was Ray Lewis?
I believe Ray Lewis was there.
Ray Lewis. I was trying to think if he was just an ACC guy or a Miami guy. He's a Miami guy. So congrats to those guys in that team. Alabama got murdered in the Rose Bowl, 38-3. Could this sway some change in Tuscaloosa coaching-wise? I doubt it, but what do you think?
I don't doubt it at all. I think that it would shock me if a coach could survive that sort of thing. I think he's going to enjoy retirement.
You don't think he's going to get another job?
As a result of that, he's getting paid plenty of money. If I were him, I would enjoy retirement because it's got to be more fun than what I just watched. And actually, we listened to it. We're on the way home from vacation, and I hadn't paid much attention to non-North Carolina football, but we were listening to it in the car on the way home, and it was, he got out coached by
Cignetti.
Cignetti. Cignetti's a Saban guy, right?
He
was under Saban. So Alabama got murdered by a Nick Saban trainee. You got your Lane Kiffins. You got your lots of Saban influence in the league still. And
even Bill Belichick is from the same tree as Saban.
And so it's I would be shocked if the Alabama head coach continues with a job. Whether he retires as a result, I don't know.
Or goes to a ACC school in response, who knows?
But that was an embarrassing performance, and Alabama does not like to be embarrassed in football on the national stage, with everybody watching the sunset in the Rose Bowl. That was a butt whooping.
Yes,
the defining play for me was that one where they tried to get him, draw him off sides. It's like fourth and one, and they showed the shot of Cignetti on the sideline, and it was clear that Alabama trying to get his boys to be undisciplined was like almost an insult to him. He's like, you thought you could get my team to jump? Of all the things that my team will do, you thought you could get them to jump off sides and fourth and one? Like, he was disgusted by that. So that was remarkable play, remarkable game, extremely well coached by Cignetti. And again, disciplined is just the thing that you heard over and over. We were listening for most of the broadcast to the Indiana guys, and so it was they were obviously excited and kind of gushing about it, but it was like that they had this just idea that like the one thing you're not going to do is make us mess up.
We're going to
do it the right way. You might beat us because you're better or more athletic or whatever, but what you're not going to do is get us to make a mistake that gives it to you. And that was an interesting to hear. The halftime show had, I believe it was the athletic director, He was talking about kind of that, like the idea that they want Indiana football to be, this isn't just a one-hit wonder. We're here now, and we're here to stay. And so that was really interesting to hear. It's always fun listening to other schools' radio call because you're dealing with the guys that have been around it all season, have seen it. These guys obviously were very excited. The AD was very excited. I think the university president was also on the halftime show. Thought that was cool.
That was really cool. Yeah.
President and the AD kind of giving their thoughts on it and their thoughts on expansion and their thoughts on NIL and that kind of stuff. So that was very entertaining halftime show. But that was what I came away with thinking is like this Indiana team feels like they've continue to get disrespected by the national media as like this is a one-hit wonder, and man, that's a tough team to beat. If they play like that, I mean, you saw what they did to Alabama, I don't think they've got the same NIL budget as Alabama. I don't know.
They might now.
As of next year, I don't think those players were getting paid the same. The ones on opposite sides of the ball there, and for them to come out and do that to that Alabama team was just impressive stuff.
100%. And if you think you're done with Mendoza, you're not. Mendoza, who won the Heisman, has a little brother who's a backup.
Yeah, on the that was cool. All the shots that I saw. Again, we were listening to the game, but then once we got home, I was watching a little bit of it, and the shots of the mom in the stands who could not stop grinning. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
her both boys got to get in and take snaps, and it was a special moment.
And then Georgia narrowly losing to Ole Miss despite not having Kiffin. The Rebels are going to the semifinals to face off against Miami. I was a bit bummed about this because Carson Beck, the Miami quarterback, is the former Georgia quarterback. So I was hoping to get a rematch there. Kirby Smart versus his old disciple who had fallen to the dark side. And that's Georgia, so fall into the light side. But we've got that, which is a bummer to me. Ole Miss saying no Kiffin, no problem there. And then one more thing before we jump out of here is I think we need to have some serious talks about what bowl games get played in the college football playoff
games.
It doesn't matter.
It's silly. Why are we doing this?
Because NCAA? You're essentially taking away the reward of getting a bye because the 5, 6, 7, and 8 team gets to host a game.
Right.
Whereas 1, 2, 3, and 4 has to go to, shoot, if you're the number one overall team and you're Alabama, or in this case it was Indiana, they had to go to California.
Yep, no home to play field advantage there.
And so instead of going to Memorial Stadium in Indiana, you have to make the flight out to California.
Yep.
And it's absurd to me. Now, am I saying take away the Rose Bowl from college football? No. Here's my opinion. The semifinals will be the Fiesta Bowl and the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. That's fine. Keep that. Don't really care. The national championship needs to be played in the Rose Bowl at the end of the season, in my opinion.
Yep. And the love affair that is, you know, New Year's Day, sunset in the Rose Bowl, like, zero people are watching this game because of the sunset in the Rose Bowl. Zero people. We want to watch the football. And it is a great time-honored tradition, and we should let it go away. It's so silly to have that be a deciding factor of when games are played because you're losing momentum in terms of fan base. Like, I had forgotten who was in the playoff as a passive college football fan. I'm like, oh yeah, that's who was playing who. Like, I was like, oh yeah, I had forgotten that Alabama was playing Indiana. Like, I didn't know. And what you want as a brand, if you're the NCAA, is people talking about you, and people forget when you let them go 2 weeks or a week and a half in between all these games, just so you can make it to the Rose Bowl. It's silly.
I think there's a few things that need to be changed. Obviously, again, as someone who does not like bowl games, I think that there are a few things that need to change. Make the home games for the first round and quarterfinal games need to be home games.
Yep.
That game should not have been played at the Rose Bowl. It should have been played in Indiana. They should have played that one in Georgia. They should have played that one in Oregon, or no, sorry, Texas Tech. Should have played in that one. I don't get it. I forgot to talk about the Oregon game. Oregon won 23-0 against Texas Tech. That was not mentioned. Apologies. I don't get it. Also, I might start a petition to make the Pop-Tart Bowl a college football playoff game. There was some serious electricity around that game.
Then people, you know, would want to watch the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people still watched it. It was probably probably had more views than any of the college football playoff games, if I had to guess, because all the college football playoff games outside of that Miami game were blowouts. So, whereas the Pop-Tart Bowl, I did not watch most of it. I watched the fourth quarter as BYU pulled away. I think the electricity behind that game is the most electric of any bowl game outside of maybe the Rose Bowl in comparison. But, I mean, it's just beautiful to see fans idolize a Pop-Tart. Do you have anything else you'd like to say about bowl games?
I think I'm good. World,
college football, NBA, or not NBA, NFL. All right, so with that, we will jump out of this episode. Tar Heels back in action against at SMU tomorrow at 2:15 Eastern time. So yeah, we will see you guys next time, and go Tar Heels.